Greetings, my friends. Welcome to the next episode of the Mint Mob Podcast. Jason here, joined by my buddy Alex, as always, across the pond in Germany. We're going to jump into a few things. I think he's got a special report for us today. Of course, we'll talk about what's going on in the markets and in Goodfellas. But before we do all that, let's check in and see how the soon-to-be married man is doing. How's it going, buddy?
I'm glad you always keep reminding me that I'm soon-to-be married.
Like, it's not this is your warning.
Yeah, I got someone in the other room who keeps reminding me all every day, actually. Every evening when I get home, she reminds me of all the stuff that still needs to be done. But yeah, I'm doing great. I'm doing great, obviously, after the special mint we had last Friday. It's always like, I always like these mints when you know, everything leads up to the day and I am in touch with the artist and the community gets hyped and everyone was looking forward to Viorica's piece. And I think they liked it. They really loved it. I know that you and I, we have been really big fans of the piece she created. And yeah, the piece is out now. People loved it. I loved it. And I'm looking forward to get another piece from her, actually. Like, I know I saw that you made a little Discord post and mentioned that you'd love to get another piece. And I reached out to her and I was like, hey, we need to get another piece as well. Like, in the future, we need to keep collaborating because that's what we want to do. We want to keep in touch and stay in touch with great artists and get as many pieces as possible, right? So yeah, that drop was great. Congratulations to Viorica again for the quick sellout. Congratulations to every collector. And now we are back at it again and prepare the next steps. But yeah, before we talk about Goodfellas related stuff, we just want to dive a little bit into what's been going on in the crypto world in the past week. And if you look at the prices, you can actually conclude that not much happened. But I actually found a pretty interesting report that that Jason briefly mentioned in his introduction. And this is actually, let me just open it up here. Yeah, it's actually the 2026 cryptocurrency adoption and sentiment report. And as we have February 2026 now, I guess it's referring to 2025, and its key findings are, and that, like, actually the first point was already a little surprising to me because it's, I think it's mainly referring to Americans. So it says that approximately 30% of American adults, or 70.4 million people, own cryptocurrency today. So it's up slightly from 27% in 2024. And one in three owners are between 30 and 44 years old. When I read that, I felt like I didn't think it's that much, actually. I thought it was less. So when I compare that to Germany, we have a rate of, or a share of, I think like 9% of the people who own crypto. Were you aware that like 30% of Americans own crypto?
I'm not surprised by it because, I mean, you have to realize like a lot of the financial innovation that goes on in the world happens here first. And we've had quite a few crypto companies who've made headlines here. You had, you know, before the FTX crash, for example, you had Super Bowl advertisements promoting crypto, right? So, I mean, when you get in front of literally hundreds of millions of people with advertising, it makes sense that a few people would buy. I mean, I'm not sure that 30% means that all that 30% is heavily invested, but they own something, right? Like they might own one or two tokens, you know, one or two alt tokens, or maybe a couple NFTs or something. But, you know, at the end of the day, they're not, you know, like stacking all of their wealth in Web3 just yet. It just means that they might have, you know, dipped a toe, so to speak. So it makes sense based on what I've seen so far.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as crypto is obviously a pretty big thing in the United States, and you mentioned it, right? Like, especially with the government right now, who kept mentioning crypto as well. If you think about it, if you think it through, it definitely makes sense. Another key finding in the report is that, and this is like a little quiz for you, for the second consecutive year, the most popular cryptocurrencies in the US are, and we have like a top four. Can you name them?
Probably not. Can you?
You can't? Dude, try. I can read it right here. Like the first two are pretty obvious. It's Bitcoin and Ethereum, of course. And then we got Solana as the third one. But what's number four? What do you think?
No idea.
No idea?
No idea.
Number four of
XRP?
The most popular... No, it is Dogecoin, actually.
Well, I guess my confusion's coming from, like, what's popularity based on? Like, based on what? Like, is it social engagement? Is it buys? You know, what is it based on, right? Because you could base that number on a bunch of different factors.
That's true. I think I should have checked what, like, if that was, like, some sort of...
It's like a trick question, man.
Yeah. Let me see. I think they asked like a certain amount of people actually, and that's what the whole report is based on. So I see there is like a little list of the most popular cryptocurrencies by year, and we got Bitcoin, Ethereum, Doge, and then Solana, then USDC, and then Shiba Inu. So that's what people answered when they were asked which cryptocurrencies do you currently own, and the percentage of that is basically basically determining on which rank the cryptocurrency is.
So it's just a question, like a man on the street type question thing that they were doing, like a survey?
Yeah, I hope they ask more than 10 people. But I
was going to say, what's right? The sample size?
Let's see. I'll try to find out by the end of... Wow. Oh, okay. So it's actually... This is like... This is so not significant. What like the report? It's actually only 992 U.S. adults. So we could actually stop here, but it doesn't matter. Like we'll get through this. What else did they find out? 52% of U.S. adults believe Trump's presidency has boosted cryptocurrency values. Okay, 53%. Blah blah blah. That's not interesting. This is actually interesting. 61% of current crypto owners plan to buy even more this year, while just 6% of people without crypto plan to join the market in 2026. Do you think that is representative for, you know, for the whole population? Like that the majority of crypto owners plan to actually buy more, but that there is like a very little amount of people actually entering the markets and join it for the first time?
I think it just depends on the population that you're speaking to, primarily. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, I have a fairly active presence on Facebook, and they have begun to modify the platform to be more like some of the like X stuff that we've seen. So I've seen more engagement as they've united different platforms. But one of the things that I've been doing is I interact with a lot of the crypto posts. And I can tell you that there is a tremendous amount of resistance still to what's happening in crypto. And I'm just trying to find a post that I responded to so that I could show you some of the comments that people are putting out. Let me pull this up here. It's pretty funny. Bitcoin Magazine, obviously, they have a big presence on X, right? I'm sure they have a team that puts out stuff on all the different major social platforms. But they have a fairly large presence on Facebook, and I've interacted with a few things, so they keep showing me stuff, right? And they have a graphic that's like the usual graphic where it's like Bitcoin at 67,000 and it says 50% off, and then there's another sign on the right-hand side. This is Bitcoin 126,000, and it shows a line of people like lining up to buy it, but no one's lining up to buy the $67,000 Bitcoin. And it's just kind of, you know, just plays on that idea of fear and greed, right? Like when there's fear, no one's greedy. When people are greedy, there's no fear. And so you want to be greedy when people are fearful, and fearful when people are greedy, right? That whole idea. And the post just basically said, Bitcoin is back on sale, right? With a little gratitude emoji. And then I said, it is on sale, and Bitcoin is an obvious buy. It's inevitable at this point. Not owning it is failing a basic IQ test, right? The same kind of stuff I keep saying. So, like, as soon as I posted that, you know, there's the comments pop in there. Like, one commenter says, zero IQ for owning something that's worth nothing. Would not spend €1 on it. It will collapse sooner or later. And then someone else says, it's been around 15 years and it's no currency. It's just gambling, right? And then, of course, we've got the old Epstein coin is inevitable. Nah, keep listening to PDFs, I guess, right? Like, just shows you how ignorant people are when it comes to this stuff. And so, you know, I have fun going through here and just arguing with these people because why not? It's pretty funny. But like it just points to the fact that so few people have any understanding of basic finance, basic monetary markets in general, and then, of course, the problem that Bitcoin is solving, you know. And because of that, you're going to see adoption continue to be very, very slow until it's absolutely all at once. I love the graphic of adoption because it's like, you know, the whole idea is slowly, 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 and then all at once. And then when it hits the all at once phase, it's too late. Like the money has already been made, and that's when people start whining and moaning about being poor and all the rest of it. So right now, you're an idiot if you own crypto. It's basically the general consensus, right? And of course, I just picked out the people who are negative. There's a bunch of positive comments as well. So, I mean, I can show you both sides of the argument where some people are saying, yeah, people just don't get it, or, you know, can you believe the stupid comments on this post, blah, 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 that sort of thing, right? The same sort of thing you see on every comment section. But the sentiment is overall neutral or like quiet in the circles of people who have money, and or it is completely negative. There's not a lot of cheerleaders for it right now. And when you see a lot of cheerleaders for the thing come forth, that's when you'll start to see like the normies jump in. And that, of course, will be when the run-up is happening and most of the money has already been made, but people are still trying to catch whatever few percentage points are left in the massive gains, right? So that's kind of where we are right now. We're in the phase of disbelief, and that will slowly change. How slow will depend on, like, price action, because as the graphic sort of, you know, illustrates, when the price is up, people buy, even though they should have been buying when price was down. So we'll see how that goes.
Interesting you mentioned these comments, because that's actually that fits pretty good to the final key finding we had in the report, which says people who don't own cryptocurrency name unstable value, no government or bank protection, and cyber attack risks as their top concerns. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting, right? Like, I mean, well, let's just take cyber attack risks. Do you think that's reasonable?
Yes, of course. Anytime you're online, you have risk for cyber attack. And the thing that is so destructive in crypto, and having experienced it personally, is the fact that there are so many nefarious actors out there who will, for whatever reason, do anything and everything to present themselves as a friend, but they're actually a foe. And if you are in a mindset where you're just rushing through something, or you're trying to get through like a stack of messages or whatever, it's very easy to click on the wrong thing and be compromised. But the same is true for your bank account. The same is true for, you know, different aspects of the financial system. And, you know, crypto scams are just the next in a long laundry list of electronic scams that have been going on since the internet began. You know, from the, you've already won $100 million. We just need you to spend $20,000 for us to do the paperwork type deals, you know, to there's a Saudi prince that you've inherited money from. Like, remember all these stupid, you know, silly things. But remember, like, so many people were taken advantage of who weren't familiar with the technology and didn't realize that there were people in the world who actually had, you know, their motive was nefarious from the get-go. Specifically, older populations were targeted, and these people were very vulnerable because they didn't know what to believe and they weren't familiar with the technology, so they weren't sure if they should or shouldn't take these people seriously, right? And it's basically the same thing with crypto. I mean, there's no difference. There's always going to be another crypto scam, whether it's electronically engineered or whether it's social engineering. There's always some sort of scam going on as long as there's money to be made. And that's just the reality that we have to deal with. So we have to be smart. And just like the banks have come up with countermeasures, you know, whether it's two-factor authentication, or, you know, the crypto world, whether it's private keys that are custodied off chain or whatever the case may be, like whatever the scheme or, you know, method that you're using to protect yourself, it has to be updated as, you know, technical models are updated. Otherwise, you just fall behind like everything else. So ultimately, I think it won't be, but right now it absolutely is. Every technical thing that you do is being tracked for ad purposes, marketing purposes. And then, of course, you throw in anonymity of Web3 and social engineering attacks, and it can get really bad really quick. So you have to be very, very careful. So yeah, it's absolutely, absolutely a valid concern.
And it's, as you mentioned, right, like it's not just limited to crypto. I actually just saw like a documentation about that today that, I mean, all of us have witnessed or have, you know, opened our DMs on X and suddenly there are like just some random girls in there asking, hey, are you real? Do you want to chat or something like that? And this is usually the start of a social engineering scam. Like if you reach out to them, what they usually do is they try to get you on Telegram first, which is easier to operate on for them. And at least like this scam I watched like a little like a documentation about today is they reach out to you, they talk to you into like liking you, wanting to date you, wanting to get to know you. At some point they go into that, you know, sexual direction. They send images and they try to force you to send images as well, obviously like nude images of yourself. And they do want to force you to show your face as well. And once you do that, you're basically trapped because they will try to blackmail you by, you know, telling you or threatening you that they will share that with all your, you know, followers on Instagram or whatever, unless you, you know, pay them in Bitcoin. And they claim they'll stop, but they never do. So blackmailing or social engineering happens everywhere, right? Like, I'm not sure if like...
Are you speaking from experience here? I'm just curious.
Dude, did you get the...
How many chicks got like your naked photos there, buddy?
Once it's in the internet, it's never gone. It's going away. No, but... The thing is, like, I'm not sure if that's like a big thing in the United States, but in Germany, there's that quote unquote famous scam where older people get, focused and people call them and they either claim they're from the police or they're like, hey, your little nephew or, you know, whatever is it, like your child is in danger and we desperately need money or, you know, like, you know, these kind of things. And I think you mentioned, older people who tend to fall for these kind of scams. And this happens everywhere. So, I mean, you know, crypto is the problem is that you're anonymous in crypto and that makes it a little easier. But as you said, you can click on the wrong link. You can answer the wrong phone call. You can, you know, go stay in touch with the wrong person and you can, you know, get attacked and get blackmailed or whatever. So I'm not sure if that is like a sole risk of crypto, right? But let's get to the next point. No government or bank protection. What do you think about that? Is that needed in crypto?
Well, need is an interesting word. Need? No. Desirable for a lot of people? Yeah. And the reason that I want to make a distinction is because a lot of times what we think we need is really outsourcing freedoms and we're losing our autonomy in a lot of places. So for example, you know, what you trade in terms of monetary protections at a normal bank is you basically give them access to your life. You know, they know everything about you. You have zero privacy. And at the end of the day, they can determine whether or not a transaction of yours will or will not go through. So you're giving up a lot of autonomy and a lot of freedom and privacy when you ask a government or an organization to quote unquote protect you. And so I'm not a big fan of outsourcing protection or outsourcing responsibilities of the human being at all, because it just makes us lazy and stupid. So, you know, like right now in the US, when you ask that question, someone might say, oh, well, I've got $100,000 in the bank and, you know, if it's ever, you know, stolen or what have you, then I'm covered, I'm protected by the FDIC, which is the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which basically guarantees that you're protected up to a certain amount of money in an account, right? The problem is, like, if you read the fine print, the FDIC has 30 years or whatever it is to pay you back. Right. So are you really protected? Like, if the government decides they're not going to pay you back or they're going to pay you in installments over the next 30 years, are you really protected? Probably not. Would it be wise to keep all your money in one bank account? No, probably not. When I was running more cash than I run now, I had, I think, like 6 different bank accounts. I would do some for investments. I would do some for savings. And I would literally move money around based on which bank was paying the most interest at the time. And, you know, now with crypto, you have organizations that can operate like banks, which would be like a Coinbase, for example, where you're giving up some of your freedoms, you're giving up your custody, you're giving up your transactions, anonymity, for example. But the flip side of that is you can at least earn, you know, solid interest on whatever you stake with them or whatever you hold with them, even cash. They'll pay you more than, you know, 5 or 10 times more than what a bank will pay you in cash ROI on just deposits. And you can spend USDC as if it's cash. So they've made it very, very easy for the average person to interact in a bank type situation. So you have those protections really if you want them, because they are a fully regulated financial company. And then, of course, you have the option to be completely non-custodial and run your own money. So I think it's beautiful because you can take either path, and whatever's best for you, that's what you choose. Whatever your comfort level is, that's what you choose. Or maybe you run a percentage through traditional custody and you run another percentage through traditional, or I guess you'd say non-traditional self-custody. And then that way you don't give up complete autonomy or freedom of what it is that you want to, you know, own and control. So like it's just going to depend on your purposes, really. But at least you have the option, I think, at this point. And in other parts of the world, you have other organizations, right? Like your Binances of the world or whatever. I'm sure they're having to at least be compliant and KYC and all that kind of stuff right now.
Absolutely. I always find it pretty interesting to see that, you know, whenever it comes to transferring responsibility to, you know, whether it's like a holder of crypto or someone, you know, just owning money, they always need to be protected, right? It's always about protection. People cannot be responsible for what they own for some reason. So it's pretty annoying, actually, right? Like, I feel like when I set up a crypto account and I hold my crypto and my whatever wallets, I feel like I want to be responsible for it, right? Like, if I make a mistake and the money is gone, it's my mistake. But I don't want to be, you know, have to rely on some bank or some Coinbase or whatever. Like, we've seen FTX go down, and I'm not sure, I mean we do not only see that in crypto, right? Like, in the end, laws always try to protect people. Sometimes I feel like, you know, it's like I feel like people should be more responsible for what they do. But I mean if you like, can I expect old people who get into crypto to be aware of all the dangers out there in the space or not? That's actually a question I haven't really found an answer to yet.
That's a great question. I mean, I tend to agree with you. You know, it's one of those things where anytime you give up autonomy or responsibility, you're giving up freedoms. There's a certain amount of your life and activity that you have to give up in conjunction with that, right? Like, Robert Kiyosaki is always fond of saying, you know, the people who have the most security have the least freedom. And just look in a prison, right? These people are secured 24 hours a day and they have no freedoms, right? And so, like, you can take absurd examples to illustrate absurd ideas and just sort of illustrate to people what they're giving up. But when you're brought up in an environment, just like a fish that's born in water may or may not have the concept of what water is, because it's just always been there. Like, when you grow up in an environment that's just always been there, that you go to the bank, this is how you, you know, do a transaction. This is how, you know, you have to show ID to, you know, cash this big check or move this money or whatever the case may be. When you're brought up in that environment and that's all you know and that's all you've considered, you have to realize that anything outside of that is going to be considered scary or strange or weird or different or risky, right? The big risky thing, right? And, you know, I think that people forget that all of life is risky and there are no guarantees. And we try to erect these sort of social systems and these systems are meant to give us the feeling that we're secure, you know, like social safety nets or what have you. But at the end of the day, like, what do you actually receive from that if you are the person that's in that scenario, right? Most of what I see here in the U.S. is social safety nets are taken advantage of, and very little of the money actually makes it to the people who need it. So do you want to rely on a system that's, you know, basically predominantly broken? I think of every tax dollar collected, something like 6 cents goes to its intended purpose. It's like 94% waste of every tax dollar. And then, of course, we've seen that with fraud here as well. So these are all, you know, just representative of the schemes that we've erected to try to make life less risky. But the truth is, it's all a facade. And at any point, especially in a time of trouble where governments, you know, are sort of teetering on the edge of stability, I guess you would say, you know, do you really want to rely on a social system, on a government that's like, may or may not be stable, or a country is as divided as so many countries are today? I mean, it really is a precarious situation. And we've seen this throughout history where people have placed too much trust in institutions that failed them. You know, whether it's education system today, the education system has failed many, many, many people. Whether it's getting these massive debts to go through school, when the fact is you could have gotten the same education in, you know, to steal from Goodwill Hunting and, you know, $1.50 in late fees at the local library. Like, if you, you know, if you look at what you have access to, like, you have the whole internet in the palm of your hand, AI can be the greatest teacher you've ever had. You just have to have a desire to learn and an ability to put yourself out into the world and offer to solve a problem from someone. And you don't need a degree at all. You just need to be productive in some way, shape, or form. But we've got a massive number of people who are in debt to the tune of six figures coming out of school, and their only job prospect is like Starbucks, you know? So, I mean, all of these quote-unquote systems have their failings. They've got their benefits as well, as long as you're one of the people who perfectly fits the mold. But you have to realize, when you're dealing with systems that are top down, like a federal government type system or a state government type system, what you're looking at is they're serving the lowest common denominator. And so when you look across the population, people are at different levels, intelligence wise, income wise, potential wise, in how they think and their mindset and their skill set. They're all at different levels, and all these programs serve at the same level, right? And so they encourage a lot of sort of low-end, lowest common denominator thinking and lowest common denominator results. And we see this in the effects because so few are effective. And it's always interesting when you argue with someone about the necessity of social programs, and you're like, okay, well, what problem did that social program want to solve? You know, they take homelessness in California, for example. They've invested hundreds of billions of dollars in the homeless problem, and all they've done is make it worse. So the question is, should we continue a program like that? Well, if you're operating as a business person or a productive person in the real world, your answer would obviously be no, because it's not working. We need to do something different. But the answer in government is to always throw more money at it, because results don't matter when you're spending somebody else's money. And that's the issue that you run into with all of this, right? So the best bet is always, in my opinion, to be as responsible as you possibly can in the given circumstances that you're in. And, you know, I'm really fond of saying it's all my fault. You know, it's my fault if I do well. It's my fault if I do poorly. It's my fault if my day goes well. It's my fault if I show up with a good attitude. It's my fault if I sell an NFT. It's my fault if I don't. You know, so all of these different things fall on me, and I just look to how I can impact a situation in a positive way. And I don't always get the answer right. And that's where people, I think, fall back on the programs, right? Because, like, if you make a big bet on yourself and you fail, now all of a sudden you're someone who is, like, you know, deserving of sympathy and all of the trappings of the social programs, right? You need help. You need help. Rather than relying on yourself, right, or your community, which is what it would have been in the past. If you're a productive person in the past and you were part of a community, you didn't have these quote-unquote social programs, then what the community would have done is they would have come together and said, hey, so-and-so is going through a rough time. Let's help them out, because we've seen them be productive in the community, right? But when you outsource that, you can't know. Like, was the person who's in a bad way, did they actually make an effort? Are they trying to do better? Are they, like, obviously a productive person who just fell on bad times, or are they just milking the system? And in most cases, it's just, well, they're just milking the system, you know? So it's really hard to like sum it up because it's so deep. But ultimately, if you give up responsibility, you give up your agency. If you give up your agency, you give up the direction over your life, your finances, your skill set, the person you marry, the career you choose, and all the rest of it. So high agency is where you want to live, and that's really the type of people that I like to associate with the most, to be honest with you.
So you would recommend everyone out there to, you know, to strive to get as much responsibility as possible?
Yes. And this is scary as shit, right? Because again, like when you realize it's all your fault, you realize, oh shit, I may not be very good. I might have to get better. I might have to acquire a new skill set. I might have to change jobs or move cities. You know, that's scary as shit for people, dude. So yeah, but that's where life is. Like life is lived in all of the ups and downs. It's not, you know, we have this idea that life is just sort of this even keel thing. We just kind of muddle along and then we get to our deathbed. You know, there's a great book that covers this topic. It's like, you know, when you have your health and you're alive and you're like, when I say alive, I mean like alive in spirit, like you're living into your highest and best potential. That's when you feel most alive and that's when you feel best. But most people just live this sort of mundane, even keel life. They never experience the ups and the downs. And you have to have the ups and the downs to actually have emotion. And you have to have the emotion to like solidify your belief system in what it is that you're doing. And then on the days that you don't want to do it, it's like, okay, well, remember how good you felt when it worked? That's what we're working to create today. We're going to work to create what it feels like when XYZ happens in my favor. And if it doesn't happen in my favor, I'm going to get up tomorrow. I'm going to do it again. Right? But so many people just get caught in this, well, I'd rather have a safety net, or I'd rather have a safe, secure job, or I'd rather work for a company, or whatever, you know, whatever the thing is fine. It's just like, but at the end of the day, like, are you up and experiencing like the best of yourself? And have you tried and failed and experienced the worst of yourself? Because when you do that, you learn what it is that you need to augment your life with or augment your skill set with. But if you're just kind of in the middle and everything's taken care of and you got enough to eat and your house is just comfortable enough, it's like, well, I don't really have any motivation or incentive to do anything different. But I guarantee you, like if you wake up one day and you're, you know, you look at your bank account and there's no money in it and the mortgage is due, you're probably going to get off your ass and go to work and try to make some deals and talk to some people and live some life, right? Just the way it is.
The person you just described is actually someone I probably see a lot around myself when you see people living their quote unquote shitty lives but do not want to get out of their comfort zones. So in the end, you always need to, you know, you need to try to improve yourself, whether it's, I mean, you know, like when people struggle to go and hit the gym and do a workout, and you know, when they try to do it in the morning or in the evening after a hard day at work, they are like, I'm not sure if I should go. Like I'd prefer to go on the couch and get some food and, you know, watch my favorite show. But you know, a workout never felt bad afterwards, right? Like it always feels good. It always feels great. So in the end, that's what you get for, you know, staying consistent and do things you do not like to do. So when you just mentioned people being at their lows, I actually wanted to make a great transition and get back to topic because miners are currently at their lows.
They are not having
a really good time right now. I just read that mining a Bitcoin costs $85,000 USD, and considering that Bitcoin is at 65, 63, I think we had like a little drop today. They are mining at heavy losses, and historically this has been a bottom signal. Not sure if I can, you know, no financial advice. but yeah, I'm not sure. I think it heavily depends on where your miners are located, right? Like, because like I think energy is really important in that aspect.
I think this is a perfect topic that goes off of what we were talking about before, like being responsible, right? If you're a miner and you're building a business and you've got a data center, whatever, a warehouse full of computers, right? And you're paying all these electrical costs to run all these machines to, you know, cast this, create this hash rate that's going to put out a random number that's going to hopefully win the next block. Well, when times are good, what are you doing? Like, are you storing Bitcoin for when the winter comes, or are you just blowing it on your new Ferrari? Like, what are you doing with the Bitcoin that you've earned, right? Are you investing it? Are you making it productive in other ways and means? You know, I mean, if you're smart, what you would do is you would sell a percentage of it and sit on a percentage of it. And that's what most businesses do, right? When money comes in, they either use it as CapEx, they buy what they need to support the business, and they spend what they need on themselves or their families or whatever the case may be after all bills are paid, right? And when times are lean, you do the same thing, but you might draw more on your savings, because you knew the lean times would eventually come, so you set money aside, right? It's the story of the ant and the grasshopper. I don't know if you have that story in Germany, but like the productive ants versus the, feed me now grasshopper kind of a thing, right? And so if you're setting money aside, you got nothing to worry about, because all cycles are temporary. The only option is if Bitcoin fails, that's when you're in trouble, because now everything goes down and there's no way out. So if you believe that there's no way out, you're in trouble. If you believe that Bitcoin goes to a million, like I do, then you want to set enough aside to get through your operating costs through any lean times. And if you're a miner, you've been around the block enough times to know that your lean times can last for a year, maybe two. So you set aside that much in expenses, right? And you continue to sit on that through the lean times and sell it as need be. So it just comes down to planning and operations, just like you would in a family, you know, and just like you would in a small business or any other business. But you can't just randomly, take the block reward and spend it willy-nilly. Like, you have to understand what you're creating, and you have to operate from a place of logic and understanding that all markets cycle. And I think these businesses are big enough to understand that, you know. So I'm not super concerned about it, to be honest with you. It could signal a bottom. You know, it could signal a continuation of a flat spot. I don't know. But at the end of the day, what it means is that more people can buy more Bitcoin at a cheaper price. And that's a good thing. The other thing that it means is, like, if you're a good operator, let's say you've got a Bitcoin mine in, I don't know, Finland or someplace where it's cold, right, all the time, and your expenses are lower, or maybe you're in like way northern Canada, you know, someplace where electricity is barely, you know, is very inexpensive. And, you know, it's a place where you don't have to spend as much on like heat control and all the rest of it. You can be much more profitable than you would be if you're in the middle of Arizona trying to mine Bitcoin. Right? It just wouldn't make any sense. So again, like, it will force those who have difficult times to make better decisions and to get up off their asses and to do something, right? And that's the whole point of like responsibility in fiscal matters. When times are tough, you get up and you sell something, you get up and you create value for someone else, or you rely on what you've saved up in the good times and you continue to sell and expand through it. So it's really a creative destruction type situation, and it forces people who want to be in these businesses to be smart. You know, I'm going to put a mine in northern Canada or Greenland or someplace like that, right? Where I can get electricity cheap and I can mine the Bitcoin at a less cost and blah, 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 right? It just makes more sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Greenland is a great example. I don't think it's always cold in Finland, but I found a pretty good example right now, because I read the news today, and the largest Bitcoin miner in the world has sold every single coin. Bitdeer, never heard of them, founded by Jihan Wu. So what did they do on February 20? Zero Bitcoin on the balance sheet, 943 Bitcoin liquidated from reserves, 189 newly mined coins immediately sold, total treasury holdings gone. So it also says total production cost for a single Bitcoin is 88,000. blah, blah, blah. And this is not like the only example. And yeah, they said in every cycle, this has been one of the strongest bottom indicators. Weak miners give up, right? And selling pressure disappears. Hash rate stabilizes, so survivors become more profitable, and the market turns, and smart investors started accumulating. So that's what people should do right now. I mean, I know that many people out there claiming we'll see prices in the 50,000s and the 40,000s, whatever. But man, like, if you do not buy now, I don't know what's like, I don't know if you'll get a better opportunity, right?
Yeah, who knows, man? I mean, what are you seeing locally in your area? I still see, like I told you, you know, a little bit about that Facebook post. I just feel like there's so much financial, there's such a lack of financial education that most people are going to sit on the sidelines until it's just so obvious that you can't ignore it. You know, what are you seeing locally, like in your friend group or in your family or in the people that you come in contact with? Are they buying or no?
No, nobody's buying. It's more like, I know some people are, you know, at losses right now with the crypto portfolio. They're rather, you know, trying to keep it and do not want to realize those losses. And they just wait, which is obviously the better option compared to selling, but not the best, right?
Right. Exactly. Well, and see, this is my point. So the people who lined up in the good times to buy expensive NFTs or expensive tokens or whatever the case may be are not lining up to buy the same assets when they're on sale. So the point that I'm trying to make, and the point that every investor since the beginning of markets has tried to make, is like, when people are fearful, this is the best opportunity and the best time to get into a thing that you feel like has a good story. I mean, no one has a crystal ball, but you feel like has a good story to do well in the future. And so when I look at Bitcoin and I look at the adoption story, it's not slowing down. So am I going to avoid Bitcoin at these prices? No, I actually bought some over the weekend and I'll probably buy more this week. And I'm going to continue to do so with every free, you know, cash flow dollar that I get so that I can continue to enjoy the run-ups, right? And so if you don't enjoy buying the stuff when it's on sale, you really can't experience the euphoria of watching it run. And that's the beauty of it, right? And this kind of comes back to the whole idea that we were talking about before about people's psychology, you know, preventing them to make good decisions. And this is one of the reasons that, you know, so many social programs are designed to protect people from themselves, you know, because when you're dealing with markets and you're dealing with human psychology and emotions, people do get like really emotional about their holdings and they start making decisions that are completely illogical. And then when you do that and you lose discipline, that's when you lose. And so right now, like I said before, like your only job is not to get shaken out of the market. Continue to buy quality assets. Look at the adoption story. The adoption story is continuing to accelerate. As long as that's the case, and as long as institutions are buying, and as long as technology is being built on these platforms, it is only going to get more expensive in the future. And so if 30% in the US, which I think is probably high and probably includes people who don't own much, is the number, then that means there's 70% more to go. And if it's lower in Europe and the rest of the world, then that means there's a lot more to go. And here's where we're at right now. We're at whatever it is, 66, 67,000, whatever it is when we're recording this podcast. And only a small percentage of the world owns it, but yet the largest organizations in the world are continuing to acquire it and treasury it. I mean, only a fool would sit on the sidelines, at least in totality, and not put at least a few dollars to work to see what's going to happen.
Absolutely. And I got to say, I'm always, for some reason, especially when I look at Solana, I'm always happy when I see it go down. It's like, because I mentioned it last week, it's even cheaper in euro then, and seeing as yeah, these prices is just crazy. You know, like if you remember, you know, when it was at like 16 or 10 bucks like a couple of years ago, and it went all the way up to 250, and now it's like back in the almost like 60s. It seems like such a good opportunity, and yeah, we keep saying it, like, you know, take advantage of these prices. Obviously not giving financial advice here, But yeah, these prices will probably not last for too long. Well, not sure. Like some people say that, you know, bear markets last a couple of months. I think they did in the last period as well. If you catch the bottom, you never know. So DCAing makes definitely sense. And yeah, this is it for crypto. I think we should jump a little bit into the Goodfellas as well. And yeah, I mentioned in the very beginning that we had a beautiful artist incubator drop on Friday. And we have a pretty cool lineup of people coming up in the future. So we are planning to have one artist incubator drop per month. And it's going to be great. I mean, it's always like we're always trying to get like when artists submit art, it's like it needs to be good enough to be part of the gallery. And like we are not... Yeah, we are not backing down from telling artists when the art is not good enough. Obviously, we want to provide the best art possible. And yeah, this is what we keep doing in the future as well. I think I got one piece ready. I haven't shown you yet from an artist, which is really, really good. I think we have like four or five artists working on pieces right now. So yeah, the Artist Incubator Gallery is going to grow in 2026 even more. And then, of course, another reminder, core pieces. Please submit all the pieces you have that are not core yet. This is obviously ongoing for the next couple of weeks and month. And yeah, until everyone showed up. And those pieces, the not swapped pieces will live in our treasury. And yeah, this is really important. Like I we've gotten people in the Discord telling us that their pieces did not show up when they opened up Magic Eden. And Jason, I think you just addressed that on Discord. This is most likely because of the delisting of the old collection, right?
Yeah, most likely. And hopefully it stays that way because, again, with copycat collections and stolen art and all the rest of it, it just gets really, really convoluted and confused. So, you know, at the end of the day, the consolidation of pieces is what's super important, and that's what this does. So I'll definitely address that more. I saw there's a couple questions, and I'll definitely pop into Discord and answer all those for sure. But yeah, if you have any questions or need some help, always just drop us a message, send us a DM or whatever. We'll get you taken care of. It's not a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. We are always there. And then we are, of course, we'll keep working on the utilities we have been talking about on the podcast and on Spaces. Jason is diving deep into coding right now, I guess. And yeah, I think we mentioned that there will be a wallet viewer one day. I hope this year. What do you think?
Definitely this year for sure. We'll definitely get that rolling for sure. The you know, the coding in Web3 is a little bit convoluted, but we're getting a lot of help now from AI tools. So hopefully it won't take incredibly long. And I'll keep you guys posted on progress. But I mean, again, coming back to the whole idea of serving collectors and really focusing on that, that's really what we want to be about. And so there's a ton of tools that we want to create and make sure that exist for collectors and collectors only as the target market. And, you know, we're going to continue to dive into that and continue to do more of that so that the people who are here for the love of art, the people who are here for the love of collecting, the people who are here and want to build lifelong collections have a place that they can come and feel like they're actually taken care of. And that's really the sole goal with all of that.
Absolutely. And that being said, we are looking forward to see you guys on Friday Spaces again. It's always great to chat about art and get artists on Spaces, speak with them. We'll dive deep into all those topics. Crypto, of course, maybe IP a little bit on Friday. And yeah, I don't think we have. Did we get all the information out we wanted to, or did I forget anything? What do you think? Core pieces, submission, AI. No, I think it's all good, right?
I think so. Yeah, I'll just mention this really quick, and I'll pop this into the Discord chats as well for people who are curious. When we asked Magic Eden to delist like stolen art or copycat IP, which there's a lot of it out there. And we're trying to make everything super simple, but you can go to other marketplaces and you can connect your wallet to like Tensor, for example, and you can pull up the pieces there that we have not asked or requested delisting there yet. But ultimately we will. So we'll give everybody an opportunity to, to look through those things, but we didn't want to create any confusion on Magic Eden. So I'll just make that note in the pub here in just a second.
Perfect. Yeah, it's actually quite annoying that you have to reach out to every single platform, right? But obviously Magic Eden is the one where, you know, the big things happen. And most, I think Tensor is pretty big as well. But yeah, that being said, guys, thanks for listening to this episode again. We look forward to see you on Friday Spaces. Remember to submit your pieces. They will all be distributed during the weekends. I'll collect all the submitted pieces during the week and distribute the core pieces at the weekends. And yeah, that being said, have a great week, everyone. We will see you guys on Friday. Bye-bye.
Take care, guys.